Swillians. Swillians, this episode is brought to you by Ocean and Earth, O&E, the official hardware and accessories partner of the Swillians. Surf hats, board bags, tail pads, ponchos, leggies, repair kits, storage, MR soft tops. Mate, it's the biggest selection of accessories out there designed to keep your surf stoke happening. It's Australian owned. Primo gear built to last, and it's been around since 1979 when Brian Gecko Cregan first decided that surfing for life was a pretty fucking good lark. And how can you not back that in? One of the OG trailblazers is Cregan, still churning out the surf stoke prod. Get on it now, oceanandearth.com.au. Buff yourself out.
Today's guest is big wave surfer and slab specialist Matt Bromley from Cape Town, South Africa. A guy who is for sure in that conversation as one of the best and most committed surfers on the planet in waves of consequence. While prepping for this interview, I realized that he probably hasn't got what he's deserved in terms of acclaim. Going back and watching some of his clips, you realize that this guy's had triple black diamond style waves at pretty much every wave of consequence on Earth. Pipe, Mavericks, Mulligmore, Jaws, Dungeons, Waimea, Sabatu, Nias, the list goes on. This guy has sent it with surgical precision and got the biscuits. He has had a really stellar run. He's obviously paid in serious ways too. He's had at least one life-threatening injury. But I feel like pretty underrated when it comes to, you know, who the big players are in that heavy water caper. He's definitely one of them, up there with the Kempers, the Twiggies, the Mels, the Florences, the Dorians, and whoever else you want to name. He's also a pitcher of politeness and goodwill who's engaged in a multitude of initiatives aimed at getting everyone from kids in the slums of South Africa to high-flying corporate types in the ocean to feel the transformative magic of surfing.
Ain't That Swell presents Core Lords.
Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Mate, absolute honour to have you here on the program today. Apologies, I'm not in the studio. I'm actually just at home. But, mate, whereabouts are you?
I'm in Cape Town, also at home in the loft of my house, escaping the chaos of the kids. And yeah, man, all good.
Amazing. And how are the waves been over that way?
It's been terrible, actually. We've just come off the longest summer of lots of wind and no waves. And this is normally the time of the year when winter starts to kick in and the swells start arriving. But as far as I can see, there's still nothing, eh?
Right. Well, I'm interested to know, man. I mean, we're basically rolling, so I may as well just go straight into it. But if you could break down Cape Town for us, I know it's a majestic city, like unbelievable natural beauty, incredible waves. I mean, like most of South Africa, I imagine it's not without its dangers as well. But, tell us a bit about the coastline there and the kind of swells and conditions you're looking for and how it all unfolds.
So Cape Town is my favorite place in the whole world. I've been fortunate enough to travel everywhere feel like I couldn't live anywhere else. everywhere you're surfing around here, there's just beautiful big mountains everywhere. You feel so small and it's so majestic. And Cape Town is the perfect grooming ground if you want to become a big wave surfer. So I live about 45 minutes south of the city of Cape Town. So we get the big southwest swells that come all the way from either Antarctica or South America, and it hits straight into our coastline here. We're pretty far south, so we get a lot of weather with the storms, but with that it brings really, really big surf. We also are on the tip of South Africa here, so we have, or the tip of Africa, so we have I'm on the Atlantic Ocean, just across the 10 minutes across, drive across the land, the peninsula, you get to the Indian Ocean. So the one side's a lot warmer than the other side. And yeah, it's growing up here in Komaki, it really is the perfect place to live if you want to be a big wave surfer, because we've got everything from really fun learn to surf waves. You can find an offshore wave in every wind because it's a peninsula. And then there's great stepping stones, kind of slabs and little beach break barrels, all the way up to the deep water reefs that climax at like dungeons, you know?
Oh, that's amazing, man. And you came up with a bit of a golden age in South African surfing that's kind of reaching full bloom at the moment. You're Brendan Gibbons, Benji Brand, Mikey February. Like that is an amazing generation of South African talent. And you've all achieved incredible success, but in really divergent ways. Benji's obviously a pipe specialist and one of the best barrel riders on earth. Brendan is just the ultra stylish, ultra technical, one of the best guys to watch on the planet, in waves up to kind of 8 foot. MFAB, old school, new school style master, just crazy speed lines, carves, tubes, big clean punts as well. And then yourself, just an absolute maniac in the juice. What did growing up with those guys, what sort of an imprint did that leave on you? Did their surfing influence you?
Definitely. We all grew up in a pack together here in Komaki, spending every single day coming home from school. We all go surf together at Long Beach, the peak. And yeah, we all used to surf competition together. Benji's a little bit younger. But Brandon and I were pretty competitive against each other, and Mikey was a year younger, but we used to surf against each other too a lot. And it's so cool to go from the competitiveness where we all kind of trying to beat each other, and just we all diversified into our own passions and our own loves within surfing, Hawaii. Benji's now stationed up in Hawaii. He lives there now, and yeah. He's just the most unbelievable barrel rider, and it's really cool. I still get to go on a lot of trips with. I was in Morocco earlier this year with Benji, excuse me, with Mikey and Brendan. So still get to do a lot of trips with the guys. I was in Hawaii early this year staying with Benji, so still connecting a lot with the guys. And we all love getting barreled together, but then we all kind of have our niches, which is also a really cool thing. And we just, I think we all have a lot of respect for each other's passions and different styles and things like that. So it's super cool.
Oh, it's amazing, man. Yeah, you guys have all made such incredible contributions to surfing in a pretty short amount of time. You're all, relatatively young. We've still the best surfing ahead of you. So it's an exciting time for South African surfing and seeing these other kind of guys coming up, Josie Faulkner. It's an amazing time where, yeah, you're seeing, black elite level surfers as well as white, which is not something that we've seen come out of South Africa. And yeah, that's, I don't know, that's hopeful in some ways.
100%. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great African surfers coming up, like at the top, and then there's grassroots. There's so many amazing programs, like just across the peninsula in Muizenberg. There's so many different there's surf schools, and then there's initiatives as well for to bring kids out of the communities. I'm an ambassador for the 9 Miles Project, and they bring kids out of these super marginalized areas. They teach them life skills and stuff, and they also teach them how to surf really well, and they get them into like the provincial, the regional championships and stuff like that. And there's a huge wave of young, African kids coming out of very poor areas, and the opportunities are getting opened up to them, which is really, really exciting.
It's amazing to see the power of surfing to change lives, isn't it? Like, you don't see it in a more stark way than in kids like Josie Faulkner and kids that are coming out of the slums there. And I mean, you can see it on a lesser scale in Australia. We still got housing projects and poverty, and some of our best surfers come from those kinds of backgrounds. And it's just something in the ability of surfing to create purpose, direction, meaning, a meritocracy that is not dependent on money and class and stuff like this. You can just kind of surf your way into a place of respect in the community. And on top of that too, it's just there's something obviously magic that we all know, that is just in the ocean when you're out there connecting with energy.
Yeah, I think it's a we've done like quite a few things with kids where you even like my wife is in she's a child's like counselor, not psychologist, but like she deals with kids, and a lot of the time like she's had moments where she can't kids these kids have he heavy walls up, you know, because of the environment they grow up in, and there's no ways to like kind of break through that, and then you take them surfing and the walls fall down, you know, they just have these huge smiles. And I think a big thing to do with it is yeah, you're getting out in nature, but for them, they're also really getting out of their comfort zone in a safe way, and doing that, and they can see, wow, it is scary, but yeah, I can actually do this, you know, and it gives them a whole new perspective on life, and opens up all these new doors of learning new and beautiful things. And it is very, very powerful, whether you, I think we are, whether you're coming from the slums or whether you're privileged. Yeah, the ocean is an incredible place, and we can all learn a lot from it. And just to kind of zoom out and see the bigger picture, right? I think it's really important for that.
That's amazing that you and your wife are connected to initiatives and a job like that that she's doing, counseling, childhood counseling in a place like South Africa in those kinds of communities. Man, I can't even fathom the kind of stuff that she would hear and the sort of trauma she'd be dealing with. But yeah, full credit to you guys and the surfing community in South Africa has done so many amazing things to kind of breach those divides and create some goodwill in the community. The initiative you're a part of, Surfers for Street Children, what is it? Surfers Not Street Children, stuff like that. Yeah, really like some of the best kind of work I've seen in that space in the world is being done by the surf community in South Africa. So kudos to you.
Yeah, thanks, man. I mean, there's still a huge divide here in South Africa, and there's so much work to be done, but it's really encouraging the amount of initiatives that are coming up all around Cape Town here in South Africa.
And a shout out to Ricky Basnett, too, a former guest on this program. You'll probably be listening.
I
And
saw you, man.
another guy who's doing great work in the community. Fucking legend. Love Ricky. Mate, take us back to the early years. Give us an insight into what life was like for you growing up.
I was very fortunate. I grew up on the beach here in Komaki. I had a background of swimming, so I did swimming and water polo, which really formed a great foundation for surfing. And yeah, I would get home from school, and I could look out on our balcony. To my left was the Learn to Surf wave in the corner, which is where Mikey Febb and Brendan and even guys like Damien Farrenfort, who now lives in the States, and all the guys were on this little peak, you know, just so competitive, and everyone was pushing each other. And then right out in front of my house, like about 0.5 kilometer out to sea, is Sunset Reef, and Sunset is one of the best big waves in the world. I would come home and see the guys towing in. That back then they were using like a little rubber duck boat to tow in.
Wow.
My godfather Glenn B was actually he was pioneering that kind of tow in surfing at the time, and I was just like, oh, so sick but so scary, you know. And I thought these guys were like the absolute heroes to go surf out there. And yeah, I was very fortunate to live here in Komaki. It's got, as I mentioned, all the stepping stones, you know. And my dad was surfing a lot of the, and still does. He's almost 70 and he's still charging. He's such an inspiration for me. He still surfs like the 10, 12-foot days even, you know. So he would drag me out to the some of the kind of outer reefs from when I was very young. And I also got the opportunity to go stay with Benji and his family, Benji and Davey, the brothers. They used to live in Komaki for 6 months here in Cape Town, and then they'll do 6 months in Hawaii. And they were really helpful to me. They let me come stay with them. They've got a house right on the beach near Pipeline. And that was like when I saw what people were doing in Hawaii, I was like, wow, this is on a whole nother level. You know, how steep, just remember how steep the takeoffs were at Pipeline. I couldn't believe that people could actually paddle into those waves. And I saw that when I was like 14 years old, and then kind of broadened my horizons. You know, I came home and suddenly had this new perspective as opposed to my peers who were still kind of locked in around South Africa. And that I felt like that was a big thing to set me apart and starting to chase the bigger waves, you know. And whenever in the competitions, whenever the waves are slightly bigger, I would do much better. When it was small and groveling, I just used to get smoked.
Yeah, it's so interesting. The ability of Hawaii to just level up your surfing is there's nowhere like it on Earth. It forces you to grow as a waterman. And I'd be interested to know, like at that age as well, 14 years old, wow, that's a young and raw age to be absorbing what's going on the North Shore. Like, what are your memories of around that period roughly? Any surfing or particular waves that blew your mind?
I've got a funny story. I'm not going to mention any names, but like I think it was the second time going down to Pipe. My dad was like, "Yeah, you know, Pipe's the most dangerous wave in the world. You got to wear helmet, and you got to be really careful." So I had this like bright yellow helmet. I was a super skinny kid, so I used to get cold. I had like a full wetsuit on with my yellow helmet, and I walked down the beach. And then one of the dudes in the houses, like one of my heroes, just like. He like whistled at me, and I was like, "Oh my gosh!" Like, not gonna throw out any names, but he was like, "What are you doing, you kook? Like, this is Hawaii. Why are you in a wetsuit?" And I was like, the only dude who had a helmet at the time, and I just felt gutted, you know. And that's Hawaii. Hawaii thickens your skin. It's so good. Like, you have expectations to get bombs at Pipe, and you just don't get anything, but you learn to grow thick skin there and deal with adversity. And eventually, if you spend enough time out there, a bomb will come your way, and you just got to send it, you know. And that bomb will change your life. You'll never forget it.
Mate, you're not joking. Like, you've had a couple of proper contenders for wave of the winter out there. There was one wave in Risky Business, which is a profile film of yours that everyone should watch on YouTube. It's a fucking cracker. It's, mate, congratulations on that film. That's like a really world-class film that I think highlights the fact that you are actually in that conversation among the very best heavy water exponents on the planet. And one of the waves in that clip, oh, you might be wearing orange boardies, I can't remember, but it's just like a steep, deep, super square first section and kind of kinks and squares out again, and you come out after the spit. And mate, I wasn't even backing you to make the drop, let alone make the pit. It was fucking insane.
Thank you, man. Yeah, that was, I couldn't believe I got that wave and that I came out. Like I because of the crowds and everything, I always would surf pipeline on more marginal days when it's like super dangerous and there's a bit of a backwash or there's a bit of a lump. And that morning was, you could see in the waves it was backwashing, and there weren't that many good waves coming through, and the crowd, because of the crowd and everything, I got pushed a little bit deeper than I would have liked to have been. And I remember taking off on that wave, and then as I was bottom turning, I realized I was way behind the whole slab of reef, and try to draw out the bottom turn and pump up into it. And yeah, I've never really quite had an experience like that where, as I pulled in, I felt like I was way too deep, and I hit the foam ball, and I actually disconnected with my board. Like, my feet went off my board, and I thought I was gone. I landed back on the board, then I hit another bump in the barrel, disconnected again. And the whole time it was like spitting, and I couldn't see anything. And I think it was the second bump I hit, I wasn't even grabbing. I fully disconnected from the board, landed back on my board, and then suddenly I was riding out of the barrel. And it was like the whole thing, I couldn't see what had happened, or was blind. And yeah, I came out, and then it was early in the morning, so, and I didn't have my own foamer, so I was like scouring the internet and messaging people, and nobody had it. And then somebody submitted it to Wave of the Winter on Surfline as Bruce Irons, and I was like, I'm
That's
pretty stoked about
amazing. The
that.
ultimate compliment. Wow.
Yeah, exactly, man. Like the Style Master. And then I was like, "Oh, that's me." And then, yeah, you got two angles of it, and I came runner up to Kelly in the Wave of the Winter that year.
Oh, wow. So, wow. I didn't actually know you came runner up. And so that's the year Slater got that crazy kind of no hands one. He gets blown out and almost blown off. Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
Oh, that's interesting because, yeah, your one, like it has that early morning sickness to it. There's a definitely soup and like kind of reverb in it on the drop. Like, and it kind of does that twice while you're in there. It just looks like such a death chamber. It is really one of the heaviest and most unlikely makes you'll ever see at Pipe. It's kind of unsurprising to hear how glitchy it was in the pit that you disconnected from your board twice. That's a wave of your life kind of wave, isn't it?
For sure. Yeah, no, I'll never forget that one. Thanks, man.
Amazing. Amazing. And so growing up in South Africa, when did this desire to have a crack in life-threatening waves really take hold?
I was kind of working my way up, and it all really changed for me when I had a session at Dungeons for my first time. Like, Sunset is on the one side of the bay, and on the other side of the bay is Dungeons.
No,
so it's the perfect kind of arena. You know, when you get a big west swell coming in, it hits both waves. If you get north winds, you're surfing Dungeons. If you get south winds, you're out at Sunset. And yeah, Sunset is perfect, beautiful, big peak, and very predictable, whereas Dungeons is just the beast. It's terrifying. I mean, it's as scary as Jaws and Mavs and those waves, you know, because of how raw and unpredictable it is. And I was 17 at the time. I had a few sessions out at Sunset, so I'd kind of ridden a bigger board, but I was pretty unfamiliar with it. And then I heard Dungeons was going to be on. I borrowed it close to 10-foot board from my mate Dougal and like a 15-foot leash. And the day came, and I jumped on the boat in the Hout Bay Harbor. Also, the thing about Dungeons is you can't see the waves until you're out there, because it's tucked behind the Sentinel Mountain, which is this massive mountain peak. And jumped on the boat, rowed out into the deep off Seal Island where it breaks. And I jumped in. I was like young, and I'm very, very analytical now. But back then I was like, can do this, you know. Jumped in, joined the pack. Twiggy was out there. I remember that was kind of the first time surfing with him, and I was just in awe of how confident he was out there. Like, he was just chirping, and like this set came. And at Dungeons, there are these two outer reefs that are about a couple kilometers out to sea. They're kind of the indicators. And when a big set comes, they actually can close out and then reform and then hit the reef at Dungeons. Wow. The whole horizon starts to break. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what is approaching, you know? And then everyone starts paddling for the horizon. And Twiggy's sitting in the same place. He's like, boys, it's good. It's still going to break here. You know, where are you going? And and I was just chasing everybody, like, I was like, are these waves going to break to my left, to my right? Am I in danger? Am I safe? What's coming? And then, I was greeted with my worst nightmare, this 25-foot, 30-foot wall of water just towering over me. And I had no tools, nothing to calm the nerves, you know. I just went into raw panic and praying everything I could, you know, paddling as hard as I could. I dove through the first one. I got through it. I came out the back of the wave, and the wave pulled me backwards. Fortunately, it didn't suck me over, but like, I was reeling my board in. I looked behind me. There was an even bigger wave behind it. And I got on my board again, dived through the next one. And I was just, if one of those waves had sucked me over, I was like, I felt like I'm going to drown, you know, because I had no breath left. You know, I just been the adrenaline. It just sucked everything, the fear. And I had five of these huge waves, and I just made it through by the skin of my teeth every time. And after that, I actually decided to get out of the water. I was done with this whole thing. It was like so foreign to me and so scary. And I was paddling back to the boat, and then another big set came. And because I was wider, I just happened to be in the perfect spot for the next one. And the wave broke over the crowd, and I just was in the spot, and I turned last minute, and I remember clearly like popping up at the top of this big blue mountain of water and dropping in and just feeling the wind going past my ears and just going so fast and engaging the rail and pulling up onto the face and just like in the curl all the way. And I pulled out into the boats in the channel, and everyone was hooting for me. And like, it was that kind of set me on the track to start focusing on big waves, you know. Like, I was chasing slabs. I just spent a lot of time in Margaret River back then, hanging with Creed McTaggart and another friend Jackson there, and a whole lot of the local guys, and surfing all those slabs there and going to Hawaii and then Indonesia. But this was like the real deal, deep water, big waves, you know. And I was like, I need to start training for this. I need to develop tools to counteract all the fear and everything. And that really started like my new journey to chase like big deep water waves.
Wow. And so ironic that it's on your doorstep, one of the premier spots on Earth, one of the most challenging spots on Earth. Crazy, man, to think that you were 17 years old and wearing 30 to 40 foot waves on the head. Like, that's just a number, 30 to 40 foot. But like, I would encourage people listening to this program, like, consider what it's like to wear a 10 footer on the head. Like, most people probably only had that happen to them, even if they're a quality surfer, like a couple of times in their life. Like, wearing a 10 foot th wave on the head's fucked up. It's terrifying. It's an awful experience. Like, 30 to 40 foot is really hard to wrap your head around. And when you talk about raw panic, yeah, like, I think most people in that situation would basically be, yes, saying their prayers, like believing they're about to die. Like, there's no other thought you could have. It's surreal
And
that you can
especially
survive it.
so far away from the land and so far away, because the dungeons you're surfing about 200 meters up the point, like away from the channel. It's not close to the channel like Mavs or Waimea or something. So you just feel so alone, and it's cold and so such a scary place. It's really the epitome of like of fear right there, I feel like. But
It's one of
yeah,
the,
I felt like,
yeah, sorry,
sorry.
you go.
No, I felt like it was a necessary experience for me to go through, even though it was seriously, seriously uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's the real test. Like, after an experience like that, you know whether you want it or not, right? Because in the big wave game and the heavy water game, you have to want it. If you're doing it for photo incentives and shit like that, that's just not enough, huh?
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, you gotta want it. Because it's all good, like it's all good talking about it and like, oh yeah, when it's big, like I'll send it. But when you're actually out there in it and you feel the energy and feels like the entire ocean is alive and you hear the sounds of it and you've got jet skis on the in the channel, for when things go wrong, but you gotta there's a long time before they get to you. And at that time we didn't even have impact vests, it was just the wetsuit. So you just like when the wave pulls you under the water, you just feel like a piece of lead, like you're never going to come up. And yeah, it's terrifying.
Amazing, man. And you mentioned Twiggy. What's his influence on you and the rest of the South African big wave scene? I mean, freak, like absolutely peerless, like close to the goat in waves of consequence, maybe the goat.
He's incredible. He's such an inspiration, to see him. Like he also only started his big wave career I think in like at 36 maybe or something, like really late. And he just kind of showed that as a South African, you can do it. You put your head down and you chase the right swells and all that. You can do it. And he's been a standout performer at Mavericks and Jaws, all the best big waves in the world. And like he really is, yeah, he's such an inspiration. And I had a session with him last year at a Dungeons where, yeah, he said he reckoned some of the waves coming through were like 60 feet high. It was the biggest I've ever surfed it. And he's like 50 now or 51. And just to see his confidence out there is incredible. Like you can see it in people's eyes when a big wave comes, you can see like if they're hesitating and they're like, no, I'm not going to go on this. But Twiggy's like, okay, huge wave. Well, I'm in the spot. Let's go. There's no thinking. Oh, there's thinking, but there's no second thoughts. It's like, it's incredible to see it. And it's very inspiring. Yeah.
So sick. Got that sick one off the wall the other week too. I was actually watching that from
Oh, that
backdoor,
was it.
like watched him paddle across and fucking jag one after I've been sitting there for 4 hours. But that was mental. And he's what those guys are doing, like Twiggy and Pete Mel in particular, and Slater in a sense as well. It's among the most interesting surfing that's going on, I reckon. Like they're absolutely just shattering everything we thought that was possible as an athlete and a human being. They're doing some of their best surfing in their 50s. Like, who would have thought that that was possible? And it's also happening at waves and in situations where it taps into like almost some like samurai, like some ancient Japanese folklore, like these kind of sensei wizards just sitting out there dodging mountains and knifing huge waves where there's maybe there's cameras around, maybe there's not, like it's like there's something deep and just so admirable about their commitment to those kinds of conditions. Like, what do you take away from that, watching those guys accelerate in this realm that you're in into their 50s?
I think it's amazing. And big wave surfing is more about ocean experience and mindset than anything else, And so I guess the older you get, the more you can work on your mind, the more experience you can have in the ocean, to understand what it's going to do to put yourself in the right spot. And so the longer you can keep doing it physically, the better you're going to get. And I know Twiggy's approach is he's figured, I think he's got like maybe another 10 years. He said he still feels in the most prime shape physically that he's ever been in, and he's got maybe 10 years left to give it horns. And I think in a way for these older guys, the pressure's off a bit. They've done everything they need to do. And these are like the bonus years where they've got all that experience. They're still physically fit. Obviously they're putting a lot of work in still in the gym and that to I think it's a lot harder when you're older to maintain, but yeah, they're like their bonus years where the pressure's off and they can just like stamp their legacy, on the sport and inspire the next generation to push it harder.
Mm. It's so true. Big wave surfing, it's less reliant on quick twitch reflexes and that kind of really high performance style of surfing. It does lend itself so much more to emotional maturity, oceanic awareness. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens now with guys like yourself and Billy Kemper as your careers develop. And, you guys have started younger, younger than Twiggy anyway, and you're at such a high point at such a young age and compared to where, the Pete Mells and the Twiggies were at the same age, maybe less so Mel, like those guys were fucking sending it at Mavs pretty early on. But, yeah, I mean, how are you feeling about the future and, what are your kind of goals?
Yeah, I'm super excited, eh? I've got a family now, I've got two babies and my wife. And so that's kind of driven me to be more prepared, make sure that everything is in place, when the waves are big, have all the things, the safety crew, the mindset, the right equipment, everything needs to be like prepared, as best I can. And then, I feel like my knowledge is growing every year. Like every time I go to Jaws, I learn something new. And I've now got to a point where like each big wave spot I go to, I draw out like the markers on the beach. So like at Jaws, there's these pine trees with the valley and I've like drawn that out, and then if you look to the side to tell how far in and out you are, there's like a little cliff with another little tree on it and the two mountains overlapping. So trying to like really pinpoint, every time I go, I learn more and I'm trying to pinpoint exactly where I want to be and adjust those positions according to the swell size and direction and the tides and everything. So it's a super analytical approach. And I've got a really good archive built up of like past reports matched up to the actual day. So when I'm going into a session, I know I've got an idea of what it's going to be doing. I don't believe I've had the wave yet that I've dreamt of, like pulling into like a 30-foot, 40-foot barrel and coming out. Like I'm still hoping for that and visualizing it and training for that. So I believe it's still coming, hopefully. The best is still yet to come.
Oh, that's really fascinating, man. Like all the analysis and the computing and the preparation that goes into surfing those kinds of waves, because like, if you get it wrong, you die basically, or you're getting really hurt. Like, and when you've got children and a family, obviously that shifts the lens significantly. It's not just about you anymore. So, what is some of the work that you do, like outside of actually riding waves? I imagine there's so much. Can you give us an insight into, yeah, any little tips or hacks, or, you know, that's really interesting, like the kind of literal mapping of a spot and lineups like that. Like that stuff's so important, and the visualization aspect is also often understated in terms of executing you know, drops and catching the waves that you want. Like, yeah, what are some of the things that have really helped you that you've developed over the years?
I think the visualization one is a really big one, like especially leading up to the Jaws season and the Maverick season now. Like, so that was the end of 2023. I had a few injuries and stuff, so I couldn't train as physically hard as I wanted to. Like, I broke my ribs, and I also got my 35 stitches in my head at Porto before that. So, but I did a lot of like mental prep, which was amazing and felt just as good as the physical prep that I wanted to do, you know. And I would go sit in the steam room at the gym, and I would just be all misty, you know, just like put myself there out of Jaws, you know, or put myself there out of Mavs. Imagine the water temperature and the air, and visualizing my lineups and seeing the horizon go dark blue, the massive set coming, and even the visualization and what I'm saying to myself in my head, you know. I feel like that's also very important, you know, because I'm naturally quite a risk averse person. So when I see a like danger coming, I automatically feel like I want to pull back, and my instinct's telling me no, like paddle for the horizon to safety, you know. So I need to actively tell myself, here we go, here's your moment, you trained for this, you're ready for this, you're born to do this thing, let's go. And I visualize the moment, I imagine what I'm going to be saying to myself in that moment, just to build that readiness to spin and go when that wave towers over me. And I visualize the wave towering over me and paddling in. And I call it like visualizing my hero moments. I visualize like me getting the ride of my life, like over and over and over again. And it helps me when I, because if I'm just kind of at home and I think about Jaws, I get this knot to my stomach because it's so scary. But then it reframes the situation for me to be like, oh, actually, this is something I really want. This is the thing I'm longing for, to get a 50-foot, 60-foot swell of Jaws, you know? Like, when that red blob pops up, I want to be like, yes, this is the time. Like, I was born to do this thing. So I really try and take my – I put myself out there in my mind, make it as sensory as possible to make it as real as possible. And then – so when I get out there – that it doesn't feel like a very new experience, because, you know, we're only getting to surf really big waves maybe 5 times a year. So it's not like something you used to. So I try to put myself there in my mind. And the way that I speak to myself in my mind, I feel like is very, very important. And that's kind of the basis for my mindset going in, is like all the words. So I'll try to cling on to a few phrases, whether that's, stuff in line with, because something that really motivates me is like to really achieve my full potential. So it's things along those lines, you know, like you're born to do this thing, like created for a purpose. Like sometimes I got little Bible scriptures which really help me, but there'll be a few phrases or things that I'll hold on to, because when the horizon goes dark and the fear really kicks in, sometimes your mind can just spiral out of control, you know. So a little phrase to cling on to can be, for me, is very, very helpful. And it just, it kickstarts the right mindset and gives me that excitement in my, and energy in my muscles, and just, yeah, kicks me into the right headspace. So I think those two things for me, I've learned recently, were very, very powerful. Because as I mentioned, like leading up to this Hawaii season, I had the head injury out for a month, then I broke my ribs. I was out for another 8 weeks.
Wow.
And then, so I went to Hawaii with pretty much hardly any physical training, but it was all mental prep. And I got out to Jaws. It was a couple of weeks after that. We had a session at Jaws, and I wasn't as physically as prepared as I wanted to be, but in my mind, I'd been going through all these things, and I felt so good being out there. You know, like I knew exactly where I wanted to be when that wave I was looking for came my way, I felt like super confident, and confidence in big waves is probably the main thing, you know. So yeah, it was very interesting towards the end of last year for me.
That's fascinating. Yeah, what the mind believes, the body achieves. And it's interesting, just by prepping yourself mentally, the body is becoming attuned to that situation. When you know, it's such a double-edged sword, the mind, because you know, whatever you're thinking about, you might be drinking a coffee, but if you're thinking about some traumatic event or some event like surfing Jaws, you're there, your body's there, you're flooding yourself with those neurochemicals. But on the flip side, on the positive side, by visualizing so much, yeah, you've it's crazy that you are able to create a familiarity with a spot like that without having surfed, without even having surfed, because you've been laid out with injury for then two serious injuries, man. The head injury, mate, that was gnarly. Like, yeah, glad you're okay.
Thank you, man. Well, I mean, just on the thing about the mindset, also been learning a lot more about the neural plasticity thing, and how through your thinking and the same thoughts over and over again, you actually physically change your brain structure. You create new pathways and new highways so that you can change your reaction to fear. If you put yourself in that situation, your brain, your thoughts and stuff, they run on the highways that you've created in your neural passages. I don't know all the technical stuff that well, but there's things that your brain is trained to do, and you can retrain it. For instance, seeing a massive wave come at you, you might your maybe your instinct is just to go into full fear mode, but you can retrain that to go into like, sick, I'm amped for this, you know? Like, this is actually what I want and what I'm waiting for. And so yeah, as you mentioned, there's the hormones and the chemicals, but then there's also rewiring of our brains, which is really, really powerful.
Wow. Yeah, that is
Yeah.
so interesting, man. And yeah, being able to work with fear and work through fear, because obviously it has a place, like, you know, that fight or flight mode that you go into, or just you know, the heightened sense of focus that fear and nervousness brings. Like, you need that to survive in those kinds of situations. So, I mean, a lot of people, obviously, when they're struck with fear like that, because they're not trained to deal with it, they panic and freeze up, and they're not going to go. Or they you see people also not think logically and rationally. They want to, you know, send it for reasons of impressing people or getting the shot or whatever, but they're not thinking clearly. They're kind of pushing through fear in a blind fashion, and you know, they're the people who don't make the drop. They send it, but they get hurt. And then there's people like yourself who, and Billy and Twiggy, very calculated, you know, like seemingly psychopathic to us mere mortals, but actually very surgical, analytical. And there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that we don't see.
Yeah, there is. There really is. And also fascinating, like, because, yeah, growing up, I was very risk averse and I didn't like taking risks. And I thought that the guys who were at the top were just like crazy dudes. But yeah, it's amazing. Like, standing on the rocks at Jaws, you look around, no matter who it is, everybody's scared, you know, everyone's feeling that fear. There's nobody who, unless you literally are a psychopath, there's no one who doesn't feel fear. So that's quite a comforting thought, even to start with, is that everybody's scared, and everybody's just finding ways to deal with that fear, you know, and to use it to surge you forward instead of holding you back. And I've been doing a bit of keynote speaking, and one of my things that I feel like I've really learned along the way is that my best moments and my biggest moments of purpose lie on the other side of my fear. So even though it's extremely uncomfortable going through the fear, it's worth it, because yeah, we're not going to achieve anything worthwhile in life unless we stretch ourselves. and we go down to the other side of that fear.
I love that advice, man. That is so true. I feel like all the good things that have come out of my life have been on the other side of fear or adversity. And it really is a matter of leaning into that discomfort and getting through it. Speaking of jaws, like, mate, you've been on hand for some of the biggest swells to hit that joint in recent memory, which feature in that film Risky Business that I mentioned. Talk to us about, some of the guys whose surfing out there has really influenced you or you've really admired and what you've admired about their approach.
Yeah, I think Dorian is he's the man, He's not surfing out there as much anymore, but it was so sick having like I always really looked up to him. He was like also came from the competition background and then went into the big wave stuff and just seeing his approach, super calculated. Like he knows exactly the wave he's looking for, he knows exactly where to sit. And he was always the guy year after year after year getting the ride of the year, like just incredible. And also applying high performance surfing to big waves, I thought that was incredible. Like doing exactly what you would do at backdoor, like forward on the board, just using the rate. Like before, I guess guys would take off and go more straight and be more on the back foot. Whereas Dorian shifted forward, he's leaning forward over the edge and he's the rails engaged and he's pulling up into these huge barrels. So seeing his approach was has always really, really inspired me, and I've analyzed his approach and his technique like a lot. And then just in more recent years, being out there with Billy, I mean, he's like the obvious. He's won every Jaws event he's been in, I think, or well, he's won the last four, I think. But then also, Kai. I think Kai is next level out there. I had a session. So a newer movie called Over the Edge. I went there to surf Jaws in the middle of COVID, and I only got there, traveled from Cape Town, and got there the night before the swell and slept in a tent on the
Oh,
hill
yeah.
above.
I watched that. That's an amazing film that people should watch as well. It's so good.
Really, really. I mean, I was crying, before on the morning because I could hear the waves breaking at Jaws, and it sounded like that. And I was so jet lagged and tired, and I was literally crying before the session. I was so scared. And then I went out there and it was huge and it was pretty windy. And Kai was just like going on waves that I didn't think were possible to paddle into. It was so inspiring. Like, and also just kind of not making a big deal of it. Like this giant mountain coming towards him. And I'm looking around like, surely no one's going to spin and go on this one. And Kai's like, yep, like paddling, kind of chill, looking chilled, and just stroking into these monsters that looked like tow bombs only, and I think in recent years, Kai in his paddle game is pretty next level. And I've watched him. I've tried. Like, what's he doing with his elbows? What is he doing? He's paddling so easily into these waves, Like, what's his approach? And yeah, he's a superhuman, like physically, but also his mindset's amazing. And I've really, really admired surfing with him in those big waves. Yeah.
Those guys you mentioned, Kai and Dorian, both of them are just meticulous in their attention to detail when it comes to their physical health, their training, their equipment, the diversity of equipment and waves they ride. Like they are such complete surfers. And Dorian, I gotta obviously acknowledge his role in pushing surfing to that place alongside Twiggy and Pete Mel and Slater. Arguably, he's the guy who really pushed it there. Like he was kind of, I felt like he was a bit ahead of those guys in a sense. Like, oh, I don't know, maybe that's not even the right way to put it. But mate, those huge North Peaks he was getting at Jaws and Rick, that was a wild chapter in surfing. It felt like he really redefined how to surf that joint.
He really did. And he was there obviously from the beginning of paddling out at Jaws, which originally nobody thought you could do. And he was some of the first guys doing it and going from merely surviving it to absolutely thriving out there, and getting huge barrels. And yeah, Jaws is the best. It's still the best big wave paddle wave in the world. I mean, I think Fiji, when it does turn on, is probably most people would say is the most perfect, but Jaws is consistently the best and the heaviest big wave paddle in the world, and he was the man out there for for what, I don't know, 10 years or something, you know.
And talk to us about your history with that wave. You got some crazy ones in that film on the orange board, I think it was. And obviously, yeah, you really committed yourself to that wave. But that clip over the edge is pretty, like, it's wild. It's hilarious that you're going all that way. You arrive the night before the swell. You're sleeping in a freaking Kmart tent, like nothing but bed karate all night, and then straight out and into 40 to 50 foot howling offshore waves. Like, how has your relationship with that wave developed, and have you got the wave you're looking for out there?
Yeah, I definitely haven't got the wave I'm looking for. And to be honest, I don't like, yeah, Billy had that really deep barrel a couple years back, where he launched over the foam ball. I think if you could kind of get that sort of barrel on a much bigger one, I think that would be the ultimate ride, you know. I mean, don't get me wrong, if I got Billy's waiver, that would be the ride of my life for sure. But there, yeah, there's even there's there, you see them out there, you know, when you, like, especially early in the morning when you get the, like, the because normally the mornings are like light offshore, perfect, and then it goes trades and goes a little bit more survival at sea. But the early mornings out there, I've had quite a few where it's like doubling up at 40, 50 foot, and it's just barreling the whole way. The whole wave is just a perfect huge barrel, and you kind of paddle and look over the edge, and it feels like the area the size of a rugby field is just going, is drawing into that thing, and you're like, oh, like, this is the one, but it's so scary, you know. And so steep. But yeah, I Jaws is the place that I think I fear the most. And also one of the places I love the most. It's that when it's like not Hawaii season, I'm relieved to be in Cape Town. And but then when it's Jaws season, I've really got to kind of build up to it because it is so scary, you know. But I've kind of got to, as you're saying, get that samurai warrior mindset going to go out there. And every time I do go out there, it feels like this almost out of body experience. It's like, I can't believe I'm actually out here at Jaws, and these waves are absolutely massive, and it's almost like this being in a dream for a little bit, and then you go back to reality, and then life carries on as normal. It is a strange sensation.
Wow. That's really interesting. Just what you were saying before about those big double ups, seeing them out there. Like, you know, obviously we've all seen Twiggy's one, and I didn't realize that there was, I thought that was just a once in a millennium wave. I didn't realize that those kinds of double ups, actually, there's a few of them. Far out, man. And it is a surreal prospect to consider what it would look like peering over the edge of a 40 to 50 foot double up. Well, I can't really fathom
Yeah,
that.
no, it's so wild. It's so wild. Often the beginning of, so when the swells hit, it's always the first waves of the swell are always the most doubled up and the biggest period. So you often see early in the mornings is when you get the most doubled up waves, because they're sometimes coming in at 20 seconds plus, and then throughout the day the period gets a little bit shorter and the waves get a bit taller and thinner. But yeah, as I mentioned, often those mornings is like these golden little windows where it's light offshore and the waves are just heaving and it's doubling up, and you feel like you want to just, like, kind of get your bearings a little bit, you know, but you gotta, those that morning windows often got the crazy ones. But yeah, obviously that wave that Twiggy got was just, I think everybody was shocked, you know. I think I heard a few other of the top dogs, I think it was like Greg Long, and they were in the heat and they saw that wave coming and they thought, there's no way this thing's paddleable. And then Twig just, he just kind of found a way into it, you know, and it was the most incredible ride probably ever paddled into.
Absolutely. I was watching it live. I couldn't believe that a wave managed to suck up that much water that it actually stayed that true to the ledge. Like, just it looked like a typical slab, but just on a absolute grand scale.
So
Amazing.
wild.
Talking about slabs on a grand scale, it was really interesting to hear you talk about Subatu, Niasse's big brother. I spent a lot of time with Mikala Jones and Brad Masters. Freak, man. both have sadly passed away. I used to live with Brad, and I used to hear him talk about this wave a lot. And yeah, it is. It's definitely the heaviest wave in Indo, and you've had one of the heaviest waves at that wave. Can you talk to us? Yeah, describe that joint. It's amazing because it's an Indo slab, you know, like Indonesia just has those groom swells, so it doesn't have the wobble and reverb. So it seems to me, looking at it on the footage, like it doesn't have the wobble and reverb of a backdoor or pipe. It's very much an Indo style slab with there's at least a predictable entry to it, it seems, and it's perfect in a sense, but you can't see the dry inside section on the clips. Mm. And it looks pretty unpredictable in ways too. Like it's seems to be open ocean and hard to pick whether they're going to stay open or just run off and condemn you to the reef. Yeah, tell us a bit about this joint. It's not a wave that you hear a lot about. You don't see a lot of photos or footage of it, but it's up there with the great heavy water consequential waves.
It is. It's an unbelievable wave, and I know that Laurie Towner and Dylan Longbottom went there a long time ago. That was the first I saw of it. There was in our local surf mag at the time. There was some pictures published, and it looked like a right hand chopes almost. Like
yeah,
it was. Yeah. Like I think some of the top guys even from Hawaii were there, and they were like, "Nah, I don't want this wave's too nuts." You know, like it really, it does have that feel to it. It is like Indo in that it's very groomed, but then it's a lot more raw than any other wave I've surfed in Indo because it's like Nias is in the bay, so it's sheltered. The wave comes into the bay and it really gets predictability and shape, whereas Sabatu is, it's almost like on the wild side, and there's a few reefs out to sea that shape they break when it gets really big. They make the waves do this, you know, like, so it almost feels like at Sabatu there is, when it's like 10, 12 foot, there's a beautiful slab of reef that's perfect. But then there's also like a big area, almost like a beach break, but it's reef. And those big peaks come in all over the show because of the outer reef has shaped it. So it's very raw in that sense. It's not this just beautiful, perfect wall of water coming in. It's like these double up teepees that come in at different zones. And if that teepee comes in a little bit like too wide, often it'll just stretch out into, I've had a few out there that's just getting locked in and the whole thing is standing up to the channel and there's no way out, and trying to pull through the back, but the wave's too big to pull through and just going straight over the falls onto the reef. And the whole time in the back of your mind in that, the earthquake and the tsunami, and was it 2004 in Indo, it rose that reef out of the water in front of it. So it, in the back of your mind, you're always thinking of that wall of reef that's been lifted out the water, and the big waves surge over that. And then, and yeah, on that big day I had and that wipeout, I got thrown, first hit the reef really hard, then I got thrown up on top of that table of reef, and it's terrifying. You're also very far away from hulp, which is not ideal, and makes it even more scary. But at the same time, I've seen some of the most incredible waves I've ever seen. The waves I've dreamt about, these blue 15 to 18 foot holes of water, you know, with just palm trees in front, just absolutely flawless. But to be in the right place for those ones and to have the courage to go, because also out there, as you paddle into the wave, it turns from, like, it feels like a big deep water wave that suddenly hits a slab of shallower reef. So you're paddling into this feel of like a really big wave. And then suddenly, as you're taking off, the bottom just sucks back very quickly on itself, and you're just locked in, super critical. And yeah, it's an amazing place. And many times when I've surfed it, I've been by myself, which is unheard of these days, you know, in around the world, you know, everywhere's so crowded. And yeah, it's there, it's lingering, and everybody kind of knows about it, but it's also ugly and scary, and yeah, it's a special place.
Yeah, MJ used to say about it, the reason he surfed it was so he didn't have to surf all the donkeys at Neas. So he'd rather risk it at that joint, mate. But interestingly too, look, Neas, in recent years, and I'm assuming this is also because of the earthquake, because I don't remember prior to 2004 it being able to hold the kind of swells that it does. It just seems to, I don't know, or maybe you guys have cottoned on to the fact that it is like a super slab on these kind of like once a year or once every couple of years swells. So you get yourself Billy Kemper, JOB, and a bunch of the other fucking big wave Avengers flying in for these swells. And mate, you've had a couple of crazy ones out there. I mean, compared to Sabatu, it's probably like doing the cakewalk. But yeah. What's it like, Neas, in those kinds of conditions? It's got a pretty heavy crowd on it, and a heavy pack too, of like proper, a lot of underground guys who are amazing out there as well. Yeah, talk us through some of your most memorable swells there, and just the nature of the lineup on those kinds of days.
Yes, it did. In that earthquake, it also lifted the reef out there at Lagundri, so it got shallower. And it's the Lagundri's like many waves in Indo get overrun in a really big swell. Like Ulu's Bomhi, is holding in really big swell, and there's not many other places that hold like the biggest ones. But Neas is a place that does, because it's so deep off the back. You can see the wave coming in. It hasn't it's not it hasn't reared up at all. It's just this thick blob of swell that comes in, and it comes in as a double up. It's also very, very intimidating in its own sense, especially when it's 10 foot plus. It turns into, as you say, a full slab. The thing I love about it is that it is very predictable. It kind of breaks in the same place every time. It's got the deep water channel right next to it, and it also seems to kind of break on maybe quite a thin strip of shallow reef that goes into deep water. So it's one of the places you don't, like a desert, if you fall off, you're getting cut on the reef pretty much. Whereas at Neas, often you're having more like a sense of a big wave hold down. That's why when it's big, a lot of guys are wearing impact vests out there now, because it holds you under for a really, really long time. And it also pushes you towards the channel, which kind of horseshoes on itself, and it holds you there, and it holds you underwater for a very long time. But it doesn't normally pound you into the reef. In saying that, when I was there in 2018, I remember Coe Smith was there, and he got knocked out, hit his back of his head on the reef and got knocked out. And another guy also got like semi-paralyzed on that same run of swell from hitting the reef, I believe. But yeah, it's such a sick wave. It holds the biggest swells that you can get, because of how deep it is around it. It's a perfect reef. And yeah, it's a sick community. Everybody's stationed up on the point, all the accommodation places. You're surrounded by palm trees, and it's a I love Neas. Is if I could pick a favorite place to go to, it's Neas, because it is scary, but it's also very enjoyable, and you just know you're going to get locked into perfect huge barrels.
Amazing. I've heard you talk about life-changing waves a bit. Do you actually think there is such a thing as a wave that can literally change your life? And have you had any?
Yeah, sorry, I throw that term out there quite a lot. Yeah, 100%. I definitely think there's ex like wipeouts that can change your life. They can change your whole outlook on life and experience and perspective. And then also there's waves, that just give you so much joy and satisfaction. I've had quite a few of those at Jaws. I had a couple at Neas that I will never forget. And yeah, 100%, I think they can change your life. I mean, I don't know, in a sense, they could change the direction of your life, if you get a bomb and you get more sponsorship and stuff. But they can also just like, that's really feels like that's living, when you get one of those crazy waves, when you overcome your own fear, and you paddle into one of those huge waves and make it. It really, really is incredible. But at the same time, it keeps you wanting to raise the bar a little bit more. And often, like, you go on a swell and you don't get that life changer, then you feel a bit disappointed, even though we've had great waves, so it's this thing that keeps drawing you back in. So I guess like an addiction, a little bit. Yeah,
Yeah, it's a good point
I
because,
don't know. What do you think? You're also.
yeah, mate, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, surfing or waves in particular can change your life for better and for worse. Like, obviously injuries can be life changing, and especially in the heavy water, like any kind of hollow wave has the potential to really hurt you. And so, I think a lot of people. You know, a lot of friends go in search. We probably pleasure seek a bit too much without really giving thought to the consequences at times, and we are kind of in a way searching for these life-changing waves, and they change you in an immediate sense, but often you can get a mental one, and the buzz wears off after a little while, whereas a serious injury that lingers and can seriously like derail your life in ways. So yeah, I try to kind of I don't know. I think it's right and wrong to say there's life-changing waves because I like what you said too. Like in terms of it gives everyone the ability surfing to push through fear and push through adversity and. It's all relative. Like, you can be a total beginner, but surfing still gives you the opportunity to push through the fear and adversity and pain barrier and get a wave that you didn't think you had in you, and then you get it. And in that sense, it is life-changing and it's coming without any real risk. And as you mentioned, in a more extreme case, the wave you got when you were 17 at Dungeons, obviously a life-changing wave that completely set you on a course in life that's yielded incredible experiences, incredible friendships. Like, your life without that wave looks completely differently. If you just wear those waves on the head and go in and don't get that one, then like, yeah, maybe you're just a carpenter and talking about your days on the pro gen, you're like 90% of Australian surfers.
Yeah,
No.
it's important to reflect on the when you have those crazy ones and really try sink those deep into your mind to remember. And when you're out there and it's scary, as you say, whether it's a small wave and that's your comfort level and you push it past that fear boundary, it's so empowering and it allows you to have a perspective on life. Like, okay, I've got a scary challenge in front of me, but yes, it's scary, but it's if I face it with the right mindset, it's going to be a growth experience. And it when the waves are very big, it, whatever that means for you, if it's 10 foot or 4 foot, whatever, it helps you to kind of zoom out in your life and see things, I think, in a healthy perspective, that you're not the center of the universe yourself. Especially when the waves are really big, you're like, wow, I'm so tiny and I'm so small compared to the power. And yeah, you can just be in awe of it. And I think it's great for taking those things back into life. And it's, I've done a few things where I take like high-powered corporate people surfing, who probably are at the top of their game in one sense, and then you humble them in the water, but they overcome fear and they learn something new, and it's so beautiful to see how the ocean does that. I think it's really, really important for us here.
Yeah, I love that. The idea of the smallness and insignificance of yourself in the grand scheme of things. We can often forget that with the internal monologue and the ego just nattering away. We can often forget that all of these problems that we have and all of these ideas, does any of it really matter? And sometimes it takes, like the Quicksilver logo, the mountain and the sea, right? Like those two things just have this ability to really put you in your place. In such a profound way, mate. What's the future look like for you? Like, what projects have you got going? What's the plan? And how can we kind of connect with you and follow your journey?
Oh, thanks, man. I actually have just started a podcast.
Sick.
It's so I'm taking mental notes from you as we're speaking. It's called Facing Fear, and it's I'm really intrigued with the concept of fear and storms and challenges, and I love talking about that with people and people in their everyday lives. So yeah, that podcast is the first season is going to be all about talking to big wave surfers, but going really deep on the topic of fear, how they approach it and live with it, and how it empowers them. I'm also about to next month. I'm engaging in a life coaching course for 6 months, so that's going to be interesting at a university here. To the goal of that is to be able to conduct workshops. So also around the topic of like storms and fear and things like that and challenges. And then yeah, the big wave surfing still strong. And I've been invited to the Jaws event for the last 3 years, and it hasn't run. So like, and I've never been in it. That's kind of like my dream, is to be out there at Jaws in the event. Like, I'm really, really excited for that. So hopefully this year that happens. And then I'm also in the Eddie, which is
Mate,
also one of the
I was going
dreams
to
of.
say, yeah, they're two huge gongs. Congratulations on that, getting invited to the Eddie in
Thank you.
particular, and obviously the Jaws event, mate. That's the pinnacle of the pursuit of surfing that you're in. So that's a huge
Oh,
achievement.
thank you, man. I feel so honored to be invited, but just to actually, I'm just praying that the event happens while I'm feel like I'm at the top of my game, that I can go out there with the world's best and do my thing. So that's always on the cards. And then yeah, being a dad and a husband is obviously the best thing ever, and it's pretty full time. And along with all the workshops and stuff, I'm also doing keynote speaking, which has been great. Again, with this fascination of storms and fear and things like that. So yeah, there's quite a few things going on.
Amazing, mate. You got your finger in a lot of pies. Well, thank you so much for your
Yeah.
time. And yeah, congrats on an incredible career that's freaking not half done yet.
Thank you very much, man. It was really great chatting, and all the best.